Today's podcast is brought to you by Howie's new book, Paperboy. To order today, go to HowieCarshow.com and click on store.
Live from the Aviva Trattoria studio, it's the Grace Curley Show.
We've got to bring in a new voice, a young voice, a rising voice, Grace Curley.
You can read Grace's work in the Boston Herald and the Spectator.
Especially Grace. Grace, stand up.
Here's the millennial with the mic, Grace Curley.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Grace Curley Show. Thank you all so much for joining me today. There's a lot of news out there. Obviously, whenever the president is talking about China, cannibals, Israel, I mean, the list just goes on and on. We're obviously going to have a lot to cover. But I wanted to switch gears here for a moment and bring on Chris Bedford from The Federalist. His latest piece is in The Blaze, and it's titled Mike Johnson Betrays Border Security for More Foreign Aid. Chris, thanks so much for coming on. It's been way too long. Can I start by just asking you to explain to us how we got here? Because at one point, when the Kevin McCarthy ousting and circus was going on, Mike Johnson came in relatively unknown. He seemed as though he was very, very adamant and proactive about wanting to secure the border. That has not materialized. And now a lot of people are saying he betrayed Republicans. So give us a rundown of how we got here.
Well, sure. When he came in, he was filled with promises. I was hopeful. This was the first time he'd even seen a social conservative near leadership in the Republican Party in decades. So I thought maybe this guy will hold strong. One of the first promises he made was that there would be no money for security of even friends and allies abroad until there's money for security of our country. The border was going to be number one. And you know, the GOP is not in charge of the government right now. The White House is Democrat. The Senate's Democrat. It's a slim majority in the House of Representatives. So they had to rely on the very little bartering chips they had. Now, while Congress of both parties doesn't really like to fund American security, they love to send money abroad. That's extremely important to them. So the leverage he had was money for Ukraine. And he said, you're not getting a drop of this until there's money for border security, and not the fake amnesty bills that the Democrats put together, but actual border security. And that tune started to change in late February, and the betrayal became obvious just yesterday when he said, here's what we're going to do. We're going to put together a number of different bills, money for Israel, money for the Ukraine war, money for Sudan, money for Taiwan, although the president can apparently redirect that to Ukraine if he wants to. $95 billion going abroad, plus a TikTok bill that people have been trying to pass, which I think is actually a fairly decent one, some sanctions on Russia, seizing assets from the Russian bank. We're going to package all of these things together and then send them to the Senate, is his plan. And the Senate will essentially have to vote yes if they want to get their goodie bag. And then he's going to put immigration and border reform, just border reform and security, as its own standalone. Now, that's just a pat on the head, because the only leverage that Republicans had to get anything done on the border was to tie it to some of the wars that D.C. likes so much. And yesterday was a complete surrender, and it basically marks just the last promise that he's made that turns out to be false.
Chris, you know what I loved about your story here in The Blaze is that you wrote about the SCIF. And I think that out of all of the pieces here, you know, we're talking about what changed, where did this shift come in. You laying out the sensitive compartmentalized intelligence facility, for me, kind of filled in a lot of blanks. So could you explain that to people and why some conservatives and just some political commentators have pointed out that the SCIF seems to be a way to pressure legislators into doing what the deep state wants?
Absolutely. Yeah, the SCIF, or how it's called around here, the SCIF, is a place where you can get your classified intelligence briefings if you're on the right committees or if you're in leadership. It's a place where you get an intelligence handler. You go in there. There's no eavesdropping. You can't bring in your cell phone. There's no recording devices. It's just you and your intelligence handler. Now, what these intelligence handlers do is they tell you a bunch of very, very frightening information about the world, about how great FISA is, how if you don't have FISA, you get another 9/11. They tell you the problem here is the information they give you, well, sometimes really important and sometimes obviously true, is information that you're not allowed to share publicly, you're not allowed to share with your colleagues, and you're incapable of verifying. So for years and years and years in D.C., SCIFs have been used as somewhat of a leash to be able to control politicians and members of Congress by saying, if you do this, then X will happen. If you don't change your policy on this, then Americans will die. And there's something interesting that kind of goes across all of them, is you're never going to get a SCIF briefing on how dangerous it is to have a border controlled by foreign criminal entities, to have a collapsing Central and South America because of those criminal entities. You're never going to get those. There's always going to be Americans are going to die, and tanks are going to roll through Europe if you don't allow for more money for the Ukraine war. Or it's always going to be if you don't allow warrantless wiretapping, essentially, by the federal government and intelligence agencies, then we're going to get another 9/11. The information always goes one way. And you see politicians who come to D.C., you see them change very quickly and very dramatically in their stances once they get access to those SCIF briefings. And it's become kind of a joke around D.C. because they always change one way. And, you know, this is something that I think a lot of us, when they see, we want to believe our intel agencies. We want to say that they only have our best interests in mind. But over the decades, and especially since 2016, well, that's been shown, unfortunately, to be a naive belief.
Yeah, I'm really glad you brought that part up, and I want to get to that. But you just said, you know, the problem is for, you know, someone, for example, like Mike Johnson, is you get these SCIFs and you can't obviously go around telling people what you heard or what they told you, and you can't really verify it. But Chris, I would also say that in a lot of these situations, it seems like it's not a problem for them. It seems like that's the part of this they're kind of relying on is, oh, I have to go along with Democrats. I have to go along with all this, and I can't tell you why. You just kind of have to. It's almost like the Adam Schiff of the SCIFs, which is like, you just have to believe me and trust me that what they showed me was really bad. And that's why, you know, I kind of don't have a choice.
Oh, yeah. It's completely insane. It's the kind of thing that moves against the American people. It's something that is used for our intelligence apparatus and the wars that they support and security states that they support, always abroad. To manipulate the Congress, to manipulate the levers of power, to manipulate the representatives of the people without cluing them in on any aspect of it. And, of course, as you pointed out, just like Adam Schiff, the intel agencies are more than happy to leak the things that they really feel necessary. They'll leak information, true or false. For example, about Tucker Carlson talking to the Russians to try and set up a journalistic interview. They'll leak things to try and embarrass you. They'll leak things on Donald Trump to try and make it look like he's controlled by the Russians without a second thought. But the SCIF they use as a way to control people. So, I mean, what you have to do when you're presented with those things, if you want to be a strong and intelligent statesman as opposed to just a politician who's led around by the nose, is hear that information, take it in, and apply a jaundiced eye, a wary eye to the whole thing, and wonder who benefits from this, qui bono? Where is this information coming from, and how can I really regard it, and how does it fit with what my constituents want and my constitutional duty?
What do you say, Chris, to Republicans who feel as though because Mike Johnson has such a slim majority and he is kind of in a tight spot, that this motion to vacate or, you know, kind of going against him like we did with Kevin McCarthy, well, then you risk putting Hakeem Jeffries in as Speaker, or then, you know, you risk more turmoil. What's your response to that?
You kind of got to wonder what the difference would be.
Yeah.
I'm on Capitol Hill now, and was just meeting with a bunch of folks in the Senate and the House moments ago. And we're kind of come to the conclusion that Speaker Johnson is sort of operating on a kind of a parliamentary government, like he's a prime minister, where maybe he was first chosen by a coalition of liberal Republicans and conservative Republicans, but that he no longer has the backing of the conservative Republicans, so he's going to go for a coalition of Democrats and Republicans, and he's going to box out the left wing of the Democratic Party and box out the right and just govern with the broad, what they call the unit party or the war party, the center of Washington, D.C., the biggest constituency are those people who want to print more money, they want to spend more money, they want to send more money abroad, they want more money for their districts. That's what they're here for. They're not here to make a difference. And when you've got a coalition of folks like that, then you're able to pass really all the things you want except for maybe what the American voters want. And If you look at the polls, literally from Massachusetts to New Mexico, people are concerned about the border. But that part, that coalition, not so much.
I'm speaking with Chris Bedford, who has an excellent piece in The Blaze. And Chris, I guess I read a headline today, and it said Chuck Schumer's bragging to senators about how Mike Johnson's giving Democrats everything they want, like everything on their wish list. Republicans are getting nothing. In other words, he's just mocking us, you know, openly now. Oh, I got everything. They got nothing. Whoop-de-doo. It's a tale as old as time. But my question for you is, if you had to, and this is a little bit of, it's a little bit, it's not as specific of a question, so sorry throwing this at you, but if you had to say, why is it that it seems like when it comes to Republican politicians, we have such an issue, whether it's the males, the females, we have such an issue with anyone having a backbone or anyone actually doing what they said they were going to do? And I would argue that occasionally Democrats have that issue, but it doesn't seem to be as much of a problem. They do seem to be able to have to make decisions, to stick with their guns in a way that Republicans never can do. And you just said, what's the difference? And I was thinking the same thing. I'm like, all we have to do is beat a guy who's talking about cannibals and kind of get our heads on straight. We're not able to do it. And I'm wondering why.
I think a lot of it is just the kind of reason that people enter politics in the first place. A lot of Republican politicians come to Washington, D.C. as sort of a feather on their cap. Politics is secondary to them. They've done business careers. They've been important in their community. And this is kind of a respectable thing to do, to come to Washington, D.C. and be a politician, and they crave that respectability. Whereas a lot of folks who are drawn to left-wing politics are drawn from a real desire to try and change the world. They want to remake things in their own image. They're activists. They never lose an election and say, well, just come out in two more years. They call on the activists to try and change things. The majority is only good to them for power. And Republicans put that craving for respectability and this, I think, misunderstanding of Christian ethics as not willingness, an unwillingness to fight for what you believe. And they put those first. And because of that, they often lose against a significantly more vicious and ideologically committed force. A lot of those politicians are really the activists. They're not held back by their staff. They're pushed forward by their staff. Where even some of the members of Congress, you'll find their staff on the Republican side, their staff are more liberal than they are because they don't want to get boxed out of any future employment activities by what's going on. The Republicans don't like to fight, and it seems like they treat a lot of negotiations like they're holding their breath, but the Democrats aren't. They're just sipping a martini and watching. There was no reason for the Speaker to suddenly have to quit. I understand that there was pressure because of the attack from Iran. There was pressure because Ukraine is continuing and still losing the war to Russia. It's kind of open knowledge now that no amount of aid will really completely change that. But Republicans just got nervous, and they say, well, we have to do this because all the adults say so. It's a pressure campaign from the New York Times to Hollywood to the New Yorker to wherever, to coming at them all the time, mixed with that urge for respectability that Democrats don't suffer from the same way.
Wow. I threw that at you last minute, and that was a wonderful response and a really accurate description, I think, of what's going on. Chris Bedford, we love having you on. I'm sorry it's been so long. Thank you so much for taking the time. And let people know where they can read all of your work.
Well, they can check it out at The Blaze. That's what I'll be writing in the future.
All right. Awesome. Everyone go to theblaze.com and check out Chris Bedford's latest piece, Mike Johnson Betrays Border Security for More Foreign Aid. I did add this to my recommended reading. So if you go to gracecurlyshow.com, it will link you right to The Blaze when you click on that. Thank you very much, Chris Bedford. When we come back, we'll take your calls. I want your thoughts on what's going on. I really like that take that he just gave us, which is, Democrats view this as like a religion. It's not a hobby for them. It's not a job. It's a religion. And when you're fighting for something like a religion, you stick with your guns a little bit more. You're not bullied around as much if you really believe in what you're doing. And maybe that is the issue. I'm sure there's, you know, other layers to it, but that seems to be one of them. Face it, the world is a scary place. I'm going to tell you how scary it is when we come back, because I've got all sorts of stories about, you know, break-ins, invasions. We've got this massive invasion on the border. And it feels sometimes like the current administration is on a mission to make life more dangerous. And that's because they are. This is the goal. This is what they wanted to happen. And now it's happening in real time. And they also want to make it harder for Americans to protect themselves. But luckily, Flip Lock is here. It can help protect you and your family. I had someone on Twitter yesterday posted it and said, Grace, finally got my Flip Lock. I love it. And he actually posted the code, which is GRACE20. He was able to get it for 20% off. This is really cool. It's a door lock that is unpickable, unbreakable, and it's 10 times stronger than a deadbolt. And deadbolts are pretty strong, but this flip lock can withstand over 1,500 pounds of pressure. I think this is a great way to ensure peace of mind in your own house, maybe in your kids' dorm if they're off at school or they're moving into a new apartment. It's not expensive because home security does not have to be expensive. That is a common misconception that I think a lot of companies like to push in order for you to buy, you know, high tech stuff to protect your home. There's nothing wrong with that, but it also doesn't have to be complicated. It doesn't have to be pricey. It just needs to work. And that's what the flip lock does. It gives you peace of mind. It's a very simple design. You're going to see this and go, I wish I had thought of that. And all you have to do is go to FLIPLOK.com and use code GRACE20. Again, that's FLIPLOK.com. Save 20% with code GRACE20. We'll be right back.
You're listening to The Grace Curley Show. This is The Grace Curley Show.
Welcome back, everyone, to The Grace Curley Show. Today's poll question is brought to you by J.J. Manning Auctioneers. Whether residential, commercial, or land, J.J. Manning can get your property sold now. To learn more, contact Charlie Gill at 800-521-0111 or go to jjmanning.com. With over 16,000 sales and satisfied clients, you can be the next one. It's not often that Jared and I disagree on the answer to a poll question, but today is that day. So what do you got, Jared?
All right, today's poll question, which you can vote in at gracecurlyshow.com, is which Biden anecdote is more bizarre? Corn Pop in the pool chain or Uncle Bosie and the cannibals?
Now, Jared assures me that after listening to Corn Pop, which is a fairly older track, that he thinks it actually is crazier than the cannibal story. But I tend to disagree.
Cannibal is a tough beat. I mean,
I'm going with Uncle Bosie.
84% of the audience agrees with you, Uncle Bosie and the cannibals. 16% for Corn Pop and the pool chain.
You know, we are going to, we'll talk more about this. And I do want to talk about Columbia University and all of that nonsense with the anti-Semitism that, once again, you know, you'd think after watching the president of Harvard, MIT, what was the last school, Jared? I'm blanking now. It was Harvard, MIT.
UPenn,
of course, of course.
Home of the Penn Biden Center, where Joe Biden was president and professor of the Benjamin Franklin Cannibalism School or something.
Yeah, and they had a think tank and all sorts of stuff like that. Well, you would think after watching that train wreck where Elise Stefanik asked those presidents of those three ladies to condemn anti-Semitism or to classify it as hate speech and none of them could do it, and then subsequently two of them now are not at their post, you would think that the presidents of these other schools like Columbia would know what was coming or would prepare themselves on how to answer appropriately, but you'd be wrong. So I'm going to actually save a lot of that for 2 o'clock, but can I have a little bit, Jared, of cut two? This was one of the subcommittee hearings on China yesterday. This was Raskin and Comer going at it. This is cut two.
If Joe Biden took a $9 million bribe from China, why aren't you impeaching him for that?
Well, who says we're not?
Well, I can invite Mr. Moskowitz to come back in. Do you want to move for impeachment today? Because I thought that was your main agenda item. You said it was the paramount priority of the committee.
No, this is a hearing on China, and you all have an obsession with Russia and Trump. It's disturbing.
We can talk
you
about China
therapy.
And Trump or Russia
you all
and Trump.
He's got need therapy, Mr. Raskin.
No, no. You need therapy. You're the one who's involved with the deranged politician, not me.
Like high school girls fighting each other. You need therapy. Actually, let the record show, I reclaim my time. You actually need therapy, Bernice. No, I just checked and you need therapy. This is the level of conversation. But I will say that the obsession with Russia and the obsession with Trump, Stephanie Ruhle from MSNBC, she's got what I would call Russiagate 9.5. We'll talk about that later. Up next, though, Aviva Trattoria's Woke or Joke. Get on the line now.
live from the Aviva Trattoria Studio.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Grace Curley Show. Get on the lines now for Woke or Joke, brought to you by Aviva Trattoria. The number is 844-500-4242. You can get on the line, and you can also visit AvivaTrattoria.com to pick up one of their gift cards, to check out all their locations. It's a really great way to spend a meal, dinner, lunch, whatever, brunch. They've got a lot of Mother's Day brunches coming up. They actually do it the weekend before Mother's Day and then the weekend of Mother's Day. So you have plenty of time to make a reservation, to enjoy the cocktails, the Italian specials. Everything is delicious, and everybody there is really nice, and it's just a great atmosphere. So go to AvivaTrattoria.com, and we thank them for sponsoring this fan favorite of a segment. Now, if you're not familiar, here's what you need to do. You need to call the number 844-500-4242. You get on the line. We're going to read you a headline. You have to tell us, is it woke, as in it's real, or is it a joke? Are we trying to pull one over on you? Without further ado, Jared, play that funky music.
Everything woke turns to shit, okay?
I started a joke.
Pink-haired wokers.
The word woke means loser.
And the joke was on me.
All right, now Emma Foley's in studio to help us out. Are you ready to go, Emma?
Oh, I'm so ready.
Here we go. Let's start with Ed. You're first up on Woke or Joke. Are you ready for your headline, Ed?
Hey, am I allowed to give you a Woke or Joke headline?
Yeah, sure. Go ahead.
Okay, Joe Biden was invited to a barbecue in Haiti, but he turned down the offer when he found out he was on the menu.
All right, Ed, are you ready for your headline? Go ahead, Emma.
Ed, I think that was a joke.
By the way, that was a joke.
All right, Ed, here's your
headline. That's not true.
Headline.
I'm ready. I'm sorry.
Composer turns climate data into music. Hear the stirring result.
Joke?
That's woke, Ed. And we
not
actually
a joke.
Have
not a joke.
The music. So a Japanese geo-environmental scientist and music enthusiast wanted to see what would happen if he attempted to use sonification, the process of transforming data into a song, to create climate-related audio. And it sounds very NPR, and it's right here.
Ooh. I don't like it, but
I'm pretty sure that was Elmer Fudd going after Bugs Bunny, actually.
If it's climate data, I'm not supposed to like it, right?
Yeah, it's supposed to be kind of eerie and make you think the world's going to end in like 12 years.
Actually, speaking of climate change, since I wouldn't have another reason to get this story in today, did you see, I'm going to let you guess this, Emma. There's a new chief climate officer in Mayor Wu's office. Did you see this?
I saw it, yes.
Do you know how much this person's making a year?
Got to be six figures.
Take a whack at it.
200K?
Right around there, $195,000. The city's first chief climate officer. And climate change is the existential threat of our time. I look forward to once again serving Boston residents and working alongside Mayor Wu and the incredibly talented staff at the city. You know, if that's what you're making a year, Jared, $195,000, I think you would say that climate change is an existential threat. And I think you'd probably say that it's like a never end, it's never going to go away.
It's changing, all right.
Yeah, because if you're getting paid, I mean, it's the threat's treating you pretty good. Let's go to Linda. You're next up on Woke or Joke. Are you ready for your headline, Linda?
Yes.
Okay.
All right, Linda, here is your headline. How Trump's trip to Harlem was a dog whistle to Russian snack cake corporations.
Joke.
That is a joke, Linda.
Ooh, very good, Linda.
By the way, that was a joke. That's not true.
Yeah, the Russia stuff is coming back.
Oh, it's back.
You know, the one thing I thought, like, I knew no one was going to get in trouble for Russiagate. I knew no one was going to have to, you know, give back their Pulitzer Prizes or, you know, even have a mea culpa, admit they were wrong. But I would just really love if we didn't have to do it over again. Like, could that be the one thing that we all got out of it, is that you got it out of your, at the very least, could these people just get it out of their system? Now you've got Stephanie Ruhle. Jared, play this cut for me. This is Stephanie Ruhle on MSNBC talking about her theory. A lot of people call this blue anon, about why gas prices are so high. Cut 15.
Tim, the last thing that President Biden wants or needs is rising gas prices. But do you know who wants them? Saudi Arabia, Russia, and their bestie, bestie, best, Donald Trump.
So that explains it. Once again, nothing is Joe Biden's fault ever. It's all a grand conspiracy to sabotage Joe Biden and to elect Donald Trump.
I think they pinky swore on that one with their bestie, bestie, bests.
Well, that's what you do with a bestie, bestie, best. Let's go to Tom. You're next up on the Grace Curley Show. Are you ready for your headline, Tom?
Grace, how are you?
I'm good, sir. I'm rooting for you. Here's your headline.
Tom, here is okay. Your headline. Proof women are meant to have multiple lovers at the same time. Penguins.
Woke.
That is woke.
Wow.
Not a joke.
Maybe
not
you
a
saw
joke.
This one in the New York Post. It was written by a woman. And she was recently invited into a penguin enclosure at a local zoo and saw the cute creatures and learned a little bit about their mating habits. So the zookeeper revealed that most penguin species are monogamous, meaning that one male, one female. But research has shown that some females could have up to three partners in one season, and some males might have two partners. And she decided that this is proof that human beings should be polyamorous.
I don't think we should be taking our tips from the penguins, though, because I will tell you this. When I went to the aquarium in Boston, the penguins are adorable. There's no doubt about that. They also stink. They're not very hygienic. Maybe they're hygienic. They just, you know, you're in that enclosure all the time with the water. You smell awful. So there's a lot of things I wouldn't take advice from them on. So I don't know if we should be looking at them for our relationship status.
Right. And these are domesticated penguins. We don't know about wild penguins.
Yeah.
They can't even fly, so...
No, but when they slide on their bellies, man, it is...
It's pretty cute.
It's pretty cute. Will, you're up next on Woke or Joke. Are you ready for your headline, Will?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
All right, Will, here is your headline. The sinister side of silversmithing, Paul Revere's problematic career.
Joke.
That is a joke.
By the way, that was a joke.
You know it's Paul Revere
That's
Day?
Not true.
Is it?
April 18th, yep.
Oh, happy Paul. Can you say happy Paul Revere Day?
Has he been canceled?
Have a solemn and dignified Paul Revere Day.
Jared's always here to correct me on those. I always get it wrong.
It would be happy Israel Bissell Day for those in the know, but
you know what, Jared? Whenever I think it's a happy holiday, you always are there as like the Debbie Downer to say, Grace, not appropriate. Don't put that out on social media. You're going to get canceled. So have a solemn and dignified Paul Revere Day. John, you're up next on Woke or Joke. Are you ready for your headline, John?
I am.
Okay. All right, John, here is your headline. Students walk out of Utah Middle School to protest furries.
That is a joke.
That is woke.
I just saw this one. Yeah, this is
not
just trending today on
not
social media,
joke.
Right?
Yes, and in a shocking turn of events, you would think they would be protesting for furries and the administration would be against it.
Would I think that? I think that's your own bias.
Perhaps. My hope and desire. But a petition was started last Sunday, initial target of 500 signatures. By Wednesday, it reached 500 and now it's on to 1,000.
So what's going on here? There's furries in the schools and the students aren't happy about it.
Alleged furries in the schools, these middle schoolers, they like to wear cat ears, they like to wear perhaps tails, and some other students were holding signs, they just want to learn, that's what the sign says, and
imagine the nerve of these kids, they just want to learn when they go to school, they don't want to be surrounded by furries.
There have been complaints of biting, scratching, spraying air fresheners, I'm not sure what that has to do with the furry community, and barking at and chasing other students. So I've heard of these things before where in schools, there's been rumors about schools right around this area, mm-hmm. actually, where the litter studio box. Is, that there's litter boxes in the bathrooms. And it's never really been confirmed. Like, I've had teachers call me on the side and say, no, at my school, they really do have a litter box. But I can't say.
You probably can't
definitely.
Take pictures.
Right.
That would lead to a whole other host of issues.
But I could see that being a problem. I could see treating people like, and you know what? I'm sure the furries who identify as cats, is that all furries or can furries identify as dogs?
I've heard of alpacas.
Meow.
Oh, okay. It's a lot of the cats clean themselves with the licking of the hands. And I don't know. It just, again, I go back to the level of hygiene here.
Yeah.
And you become distracting to the other students in class. Like, I remember being distracted in class if someone was a heavy breather, let alone if someone was peeing in a litter box or, you know, scratching themselves or whatever.
Well, that's the part of the dress code that they're really trying to emphasize, that it's, you know, you can express yourself in a public school, but once it gets distracting and annoying.
Can't wear a full mascot creepy. Costume or.
Right.
That's a hard thing, though, to figure out of where the line is, you know? Like the cat ears. Is that where you draw the line? The tail. No props. Maybe that's what you have to do. Jared's laughing at me, but like what else?
Can't carry around a string with a catnip kush ball on it.
Yeah.
Know?
I would say to the kids, listen, if you really like cats and you want to wear a shirt with a cat on it, that's okay. If you want to wear a tail, that's where we draw the line.
Yeah, it's a gateway to furry.
It's a gateway to the litter box, and we don't want that.
Sexy cows, sexy pigs, sexy chickens, sexy fishes.
You love that cut. And that's something that's something you've got to reflect on is why you always go for that. Hey, you know what?
Fishes.
Okay, I don't even know where I was going to go. The sexy fishes is always distracting to me. Emma Foley, thank you so much for joining us for today's Woker Joke. Thank you for everyone for participating. When we come back, we've got to talk about these anti-Israel. You know, I'm getting real sick of this description, this label. These pro-Hamas rallies that are occurring all over the country. Right now, there's a lot of focus on Columbia University. Now, the president was testifying yesterday in a hearing about Columbia. She couldn't say whether the phrase, the chant from the river to the sea, Palestine must be free, if she considers that anti-Semitic. However, today we have people outside of Columbia chanting, actually, Jerry, let's just play it. We'll tease this and we'll talk about it more when we come back. This is protesters near Columbia University, Cut 11.
We are Hamas!
You're Hamas, wow. You're what? You're Hamas?
Yes, we're all Hamas,
hey? I'm with Hamas! That's you!
Talk about distracting in school. I don't think anyone's getting any learning done with that going on. And by the way, I was thinking about this because sometimes if you partake in a protest, I've never partaken in a protest, but, you know, it's everybody's right if you want to partake in some sort of march or whatever. But once you start to notice that these protests get taken over by people chanting things that you claim, a lot of people now in Dearborn are saying, you know, we don't associate with the people chanting death to America. Politicians are kind of trying to distance themselves. But once you know that these things that are happening all over the country, like Toby Leary pointed out, it's organized by one group most of the time. Once you know that there's a tendency for people to bring signs that say things like death to America or chant things like that are pro-Iran or say we are Hamas, or, you know, any of these things, or call Jewish people pigs, once that happens once, twice, three times, I think most sane people, like the people who claim, oh, I'm not pro-Hamas, I'm just pro-Palestinian, I'm just pro-humanitarian aid to Gaza, once you see that happening, you have to think to yourself, I'm not going to this protest. Because even if it's not what I feel, the protest has now been compromised. 844-500-4242. We'll be right back. We've got protesters in Seattle. We've got protesters at Columbia University. And also, Ilhan Omar's daughter has been suspended from her school for involvement in, again, anti-Israel protests. We'll be right back.
Hi, it's Toby from Cape Gunworks. I'm taking all your firearm and self-defense questions every Tuesday. Join Grace and me for 2A Tuesday, Tuesdays at 2 p.m.
This is the Grace Curley Show.
Welcome back, everyone. A lot of hoopla at Columbia University today. Police are now detaining the anti-Israel protesters who were chanting. We have here from the New York Post, it says, shocking video footage captured the moment a protester near Columbia declared, "We're all Hamas and long live Hamas," at protests as protests intensified on Wednesday, with dozens of students taking part in a Gaza solidarity encampment at the university's president face congressional grilling. We actually have the sound of the president facing congressional grilling. I don't understand why this stuff is labeled grilling either. I know I'm becoming a little bit nitpicky here with the labels, but they're basic questions. Like, for any other person, only the Columbia University president would consider these trick questions, where it's like, do you think from the river to the sea is anti-Semitic? Can I phone a friend? How much time do I have?
It was like saying genocide depended on the context.
Yes.
What, I can't remember which president that was.
It depends what your political party is. Can I have the Columbia University president? This is cut 12.
President Chavik, earlier today the question was posed, are chants of From the River to the Sea anti-Semitic? And Professor Schweitzer, head of the anti-Semitism task force at Columbia, said, I guess you gave a very clear answer. Mm-hmm. Yes. You, on the other hand, hemmed and hawed, and then eventually said, I hear them as such, some people don't. Mm-hmm. What are you talking about there? Who are these people that you're referring to?
Well, I think even surveys by the Anti-Defamation League and others have shown that even that some Jewish people don't hear that as anti-Semitic, whereas I would say the majority do. So it's one of those phrases that is heard differently.
So that's who you're referring to, is the Jewish population?
I know exactly where this is going. This is a page out of Nancy Pelosi's book. When Ilhan Omar was putting forward all sorts of anti-Semitic tropes and saying things like, oh, they only care about the Benjamins and, you know, Israel has hypnotized the world or whatever nonsense she was spewing, Nancy Pelosi had the same excuse. Like, you can't call out this anti-Semitism because it's from the radical left and, you know, they get to call the shots. They're in charge of our country right now. So instead you have to say, well, they have a different experience in the use of words. You know, words mean different things to different people. I hear something one way and you hear it the other. And it's that vagueness, it's that use of euphemisms that we see constantly in the Democrat Party, whether it has to do with gender-affirming healthcare, whether it has to do with very fake news and disinformation. They do not want to be specific. They do not want to deal in facts because they know their arguments can't stand up. So they use extremely stupid, pretzel-bending excuses rather than just calling things as they are, which is, yes, you guys have an anti-Semitism problem. It's running rampant on these campuses, and it's running rampant across this country, unfortunately. 844-500-4242. We'll be back with more. Don't go anywhere.